So we're to talk about the practice of the Dhamma, that we practice for the sake of knowing and seeing in a correct way and gaining an understanding into the Dhamma. So today we had a ceremony that was a matter of merit and kusala, skillfulness. We recollected the goodness of the Buddha, the Dhamma, the Sangha, and chanted in praise of the good qualities of all of these 28 Buddhas. So the arising of each of these perfectly self-awakened Buddhas into this world is something very difficult. It takes an extremely long time for that to happen. And so we are members of the Sangha, so those who have faith, belief, inspiration, and sincerity of heart, those who see the drawbacks in the cycle of samsara, and so have come to leave the home life and ordain. So the Buddha, he taught about generosity, the selfless giving, for the sake of refining the heart. And this is the highest kind of giving, and that which gives great benefit, is giving in order to, or in a way that cleans out the heart and makes it pure, cleans the heart and frees it from greed. Because this is a defilement of the mind, this lobha, this greed, this wanting the possessions of others to be our possessions, or not gaining things in a correct way. So this dana, generosity, it's a means of clearing this out from the heart, not wanting other people's possessions, and instead giving things that we own to others. And so this is a form of merit. And we do this merit in a skillful way, which is that we do it without desiring merit from it, but rather we do it for the sake of bringing the heart to peace and to cleanliness. And being generous in this way, it brings great results, because the heart does become more pure. And so we give with a pure heart, we give objects which are pure, and this brings great benefit. And so this means that we are creating merit in a way that is mindful and a way that uses our wisdom. In a way in which we create that merit without wanting anything in return from it. And so this is the generosity. And so there's generosity, and then there's sila, virtue. So keeping the precepts, the 5 precepts, the 8, 10 precepts, 227 precepts, there's great value to this. And the Buddha praised sila, virtue, as something which gives us happiness and peace of heart. It's the causes and conditions for the arising of the Dhamma of Samadhi. Because it's natural and normal for our minds that when they receive any sensory experience, a greed, hatred, or delusion arises. So we need the sila there constantly with the mind in order to not let any danger arise for us. And so when we've trained the mind in these aspects of virtue and generosity already, then this brings about an ease, a spaciousness, a comfort of heart, which brings the mind to a celestial level. But this isn't yet true peace of mind. Because there is still attachment there present. There's still the sense of self and things that belong to me. So when we ordained, we saw the drawbacks in the cycle of samsara that takes us from birth to death and birth to death. And that happens due to the power of not knowing, this power of delusion and detachment. And so we come to practice then. And even though this is something which is quite difficult to do, this practice of nekama barumi, this barumi of renunciation, and something that requires a greater degree of patient endurance to fulfill. And that's even more the case for those who ordain in the forest tradition. And so eating just once a day, going on alms round, taking up the ascetic practices of not lying down sometimes at night, practicing through the night, eating just once a day. And so this is something which is quite difficult to do. But we contemplate that we were able to get this opportunity from the great virtues of the Buddha, who allowed us the chance to take on these robes for the sake of the realization of Nibbana. Nibbana here, it means the mind which is freed from greed, hatred, and delusion. And this is our goal, this is what we've set our hearts on. And so we have these material things, so our kutis, our huts, these meditation halls, and we use them to chant, to practice, to cultivate the mind. And we build a jetty or a stupa. We can use that for walking around in circumambulation, training the heart to be peaceful, that coolness and ease arises, and freed from the five hindrances, for example, of kama, chanda, delight and sensuality, bringing the mind to cleanliness and ease, a spaciousness. So when we have this recollection of Buddha, Dhammo, Sangha with the mind, then it brings about ease. And it's important for us to use these objects because our minds normally are very scattered. They think all about the place because they're weak. The energy of our mindfulness is weak, and that pulls our efforts down. And the faith that we have in training our mind drops. And that's because there's just so much scatteredness in the mind with regards to all of the sense objects that we experience. And so then it all becomes very difficult. So we need to put in our efforts then. So you put in our efforts of practice, of chanting. And here, chanting, we can do that within the mind. We don't need to be chanting out loud. But we bring it up as an object of the mind. This recollection of the Buddha, Buddha Nusati, Dhamma Nusati, Sangha Nusati, bringing the mind to peace. These are meditation objects that we use. These Kamatana objects of the recollection of the Buddha, the Dhamma, the Sangha. Or as monastics, we can use kesa, loma, naka, danta, tacho, so hair of the head, hair of the body, nails, teeth, and skin as our objects. This gayakata sati, a recollection of the body. And for example, recollecting the breath, knowing the breath, anapanasati. So when the mind is peaceful and still, and then we take it to contemplate, and the body, the hair of the head, hair of the body, the nails, the teeth, the skin. And in the beginning, this is a memory, a perception that we bring up. If we're going to try to bring up these objects in a clear image, we may not be able to do that. Perhaps we've read in the scriptures that by training in this, maybe after 3 weeks, 1 month, that a clear mental image, a nimitta, can arise within the mind. or an image which we're able to manipulate and make it large or small, just what's useful for us. But initially, we may not see that. The image we can bring up, it's not very clear. But still, we recollect this body and see it, that it's not something that is clean. If part of the body falls, the hair, for example, falls into some food, we won't want to eat that. It's not clean anymore because there's all this bacteria there. So this is a means of contemplating the body. We can peel the skin off in our mind's eye and see the blood flowing out. We see that wherever we cut the body with a knife, there'll be blood flowing out. And no matter where a cut develops, and that's because all throughout the body, just underneath the skin, there's all these veins and blood vessels. But with our eyes, we can't see that. All that we see is the external parts. And so the sounds and the smells, the tactile sensations that we delight in, these come from forms as well. Even these Dhamma Ramanas, these internal Ramanas, that they too come from forms. And these are things which the heart becomes delighted in, and seeing them as being beautiful through the heart's delusion. So when we contemplate the body, we see the hair of the head, the hair of the body, the nails, the teeth, the skin. These are the external aspects. So the Buddha taught about these external aspects, contemplating those and contemplating the internal aspects as well. So the body in the body, and what's there? There are these five outer parts, and so there are 27 inner parts. So there's the skeleton, and there's the lungs, the heart, the kidneys, the liver. There's also the undigested food and the excrement, the blood, the lymph. As Venerable Ajahn Chah taught, that with all of us sitting here like we are now, if we peeled the skin off from all of our bodies, then they'd all be red and blood would be flowing out, and there'd be that pungent smell of raw flesh. And we would perceive our own bodies as being something dirty. So when there was an ordination, Venerable Ajahn Chah would give these kinds of teachings. And I'd listen to them and I'd think that I'm still not able to do this, not able to peel the skin off like this. That was because the samadhi hadn't reached that point yet. And so need to bring it up as a perception first. But if we carry on practicing, carry on meditating, then we begin to see this. Really begin to see that the body is not something beautiful. This is something that we're able to really think about or figure out. We begin to see the body within the body and peel the skin off. As we do that, then it becomes even more disgusting. And the heart then becomes bright and contented due to that insight into truth. If we see the body as being beautiful, then there's a desire for other people's bodies, for our own bodies, and that there is the darkness of delusion in the mind. But if we see the body as being unattractive, then the mind becomes bright. So may you train yourself to contemplate like this constantly. And this is the work of monastics, of those who have ordained. So whether male or female are considered as those who have ordained, or just anyone who is intent on training themselves in meditation is really someone who has ordained, in that they have ordained their hearts. And so this ordination as a bhikkhu, as a bhikkhuni, as a mechi, that this is external ordination. But the ordaining of the heart, this happens when one takes on the practice. And this can happen keeping the five precepts, the eight precepts, the 10 precepts. that there's this intent to cultivate the heart. And through that intent, then one has ordained their hearts already, that they have this quality of renunciation, and they are ones who are practicing. And so these are people who are able to chant all night, able to practice throughout the night, because they've done these things before. They have this sincerity of heart. So when we train our minds well, then we take them to steadily contemplate, and our insights become clearer and clearer. That we can see that the body is not beautiful, and then we can see it break apart and turn into its elements. If we don't have the Dhamma of Samadhi, however, then the Dhamma of wisdom can't arise. But when we have mindfulness and samadhi well established, then we contemplate and we can see more and more clearly. And so really this depends upon the mind being at peace. But then with a peaceful mind, when we contemplate, we can see the elements of the body break apart and turn into emptiness. We're not able to perceive any self there. At this point, there's no doubts in the mind with regards to the practice. But before, however, there may have been a huge amount of doubting, doubts as large as a mountain. No, we're just not able to take out from the heart. And there's just so much doubting going on. And so for myself, I was like this. I then would listen to Ajahn Chah teach, and the heart would become bright. It really feel like Nibbana was close by. And this was due to the barami of loving kindness that was able to disperse the defilements. But then as the days passed by, the mind would slowly get covered up again. And just like a pond that slowly gets covered over with water weeds. And so the mind would become covered over once more. It would become chaotic and it would lack in its peace. But if we carry on practicing, even though there may be a lot of doubting going on, but despite that, we continue training the mind, following the teachings of the awakened beings, following the teachings of Venerable Ajahn Chah, and sincerely training our minds on this path. We don't abandon our sincerity, our focused efforts, and then we will be able to get there. So when we ordain with a goal in mind, which is knowing the Dhamma. So this is the sasana dhamma, the dhamma of this religion. There's the material things that the lay people offer and build, and these are the sasana wattu, the material aspects of the religion. And these are there for us to practice so that the sasana dhamma arises within the heart. But this depends upon people who are coming into the religion to practice. And so for each member of the Sangha to ordain, they need faith, and it's really not easy for this ordination to happen. There needs to be this faith in order to relinquish everything, to give up all of the happiness that we've had before, all of the fun and enjoyment of following our moods, which we have done before. But this fun, this happiness, it's not something permanent or long-lasting. So we then see the drawbacks of the cycle of samsara. You see the drawbacks of a happiness which is dependent upon this body which ages with each day. And then we come to train ourselves and practice. until we see the body as being just a body, just a collection of elements. And all of our doubts disappear. Both the body and the mind turn bright and light. And so here, the seeing of the Dhamma, it's not something which is difficult, it's right close by. When the mind gathers together, the path comes together in harmony, and then seeing the Dhamma is easy. So it's like the story of Venerable Sivali, when his head was being shaved, and then just a piece of hair fell the first time, and he saw that and reached Sotapanna. So what this shows is that his samadhi had been very deep and very strong for a long time already, that this wisdom was able to come following that. And so this happened then four times, and the first time that he saw his hair fall, he reached Sotapanna, a stream enterer, and then Sakatagami, once returner, Anagami, non-returner, and then Arahant, a fully awakened being. And so he had a lot of barami there already. His samadhi was full. When it was full, then this knowledge could arise. And so this knowledge destroys the defilements little by little. So maybe one day we're able to see a flake of skin fall from the body, and knowledge immediately arises. There can be this very clear nimitta which comes up. Or we can see a strand of hair fall, and before it reaches the floor, and we gain a clear insight into that, we see how really there's no self within that. But this depends upon firm samadhi, depends upon our mindfulness for wisdom to arise. And but when this happens, then effort will just naturally come up. It's not something that we need to intentionally bring up. It will come up by itself, because the mind is at peace. We don't need to force ourselves. We'll just do walking meditation, sitting meditation, just naturally. And the mind will be leading the body in this, in walking and sitting. And so here this training just happens, the faith is full, the effort is constant, and so there's this constant development of the mind, and we don't get fed up with our meditation. And when this happens, then knowing the Dhamma, seeing the Dhamma is very close by. It's like the mind passes over to the other shore. It's the state of Gotarapuchitta and Gotarapujnana. So the mind and this knowledge of this changing lineage. And seeing Nibbana very clear, seeing the other shore. And so doubts here disappear. And so this came from listening to the teachings of Ajahn Chah. The training that he had laid down. This teaching of taking the mind to contemplate the body and seeing the body clearly. And this leads us to relieving all our doubts. So we put in our efforts until we see this clearly, until the path, marga, comes together and we don't have any doubts anymore, that there's a knowing and a seeing. But all of this arises, firstly, from faith and from our efforts, from our patient endurance, from practicing without stop. And this then leads us to a knowing and a seeing within our hearts, to having a firm foundation, something we can truly rely upon in our hearts, seeing the Dhamma and seeing the Buddha. So when we chant in praises of the goodness of the Buddha, the Dhamma, the Sangha, so this we can see these good qualities present within our own hearts. And here is the genuine Buddha. So we understand here that the Buddha was real, that he really was born, that he really did attain awakening, that he didn't come out and teach. You see that the Dhamma really does lead to the ending of suffering, that the Sangha, the awakened beings, are real, those who have genuinely seen the Dhamma. So this all happens within the heart. But it begins with the faith to ordain, with the endurance to not follow our moods, this nekama barami, this renunciation. And this then takes us, as we carry on training, to seeing the noble truths, the truths of dukkha, its origin, its cessation, and the path leading to that cessation. When the mind is peaceful in a state of samadhi, this is able to control the defilements to a degree. And so when the path is strong, then it's able to win out over the defilements. And when the defilements are stronger, then they are the ones who win. But when samadhi is very strong, then the path becomes strong, and the defilements aren't able to win out over it. And as we carry on contemplating, wisdom comes up, and then we're able to steadily destroy the defilements. At the beginning, we need to use sanya, perception, memory, like memory of the different parts of the body, hair of the head, hair of the body, the nails, the teeth, the skin. These aren't beautiful. All 32 parts are not beautiful. Well, this perception of the body breaking apart after its death. And where can we find any beauty there? Well, the things that we like, white skin, for example, you see that it ends up just being filled with maggots. It's not beautiful at all. And there are these 10 asubha contemplations. So we can contemplate each of those, seeing the body as being a bag of maggots, a bag of feces, a bag of blood. Or we can see the bones disintegrate and liquefy. It's like the body is just filled with these disintegrated bones. And through this, then, we relieve any delight we may have had within our own bodies or the bodies of others. And so the heart releases this, becomes more and more peaceful, it gains clarity of its vision, begins to really understand. In the beginning, this does depend upon the sanya. And so we have this recollection, this sanya memory of the skin. And then as we do that, then nimitta, a vision, can arise. The heart becomes peaceful. We see that it's just made of elements. And we can see that in more and more subtle ways. You see each part of the body and see that really it's not something beautiful. It's not something clean. Here the mind can enter into emptiness until it really reaches its full energy, that the samadhi grows, the wisdom becomes more and more refined, until the mind gains genuine knowledge, and Buddha, this Buddha nature, appears within the heart. So when we set ourselves on this path of training, then we will know and see and attain to the Dhamma. And so this is due to us training. It's training in this aspect of nekama, of relinquishment. And so it's like we are taking ourselves out of the water, like a log which has been immersed in the water. You take it out, put it on the bank, and it can bathe in the sun. And as it does that, then it will dry out and it will be able to catch fire very easily. Even though initially there may still be some sap there within it, but eventually that dries out and it can catch fire easily. And so nekama, its relinquishment, is like that. And so the mind, we're not allowing it to just follow its moods and follow the sense impressions. We're taking it out of that and putting it in the sun. So therefore, may you set your hearts on this. You've ordained into the Sangha already, and we all have this intent. We all have respect for our teacher and have given up the time to travel from far away to gather together for this event of birthday in 2 days. And so I don't have anything other to give to you in return, other than these teachings which I've gained from my mother, father, guide in the Dhamma, Venerable Ajahn Chah. I had to pass through a lot of fear to gain these. And going in to stay in a charnel ground, in cemeteries, and there was incredible amounts of fear that came up. But then wisdom also arose. What is it that I'm afraid of? And he saw the body as being something empty. And from this intense fear, the fear just disappeared. And I saw the bones scattered around me as being like the flowers of the noble beings. Venerable Ajahn Chah had said that I should go practice in the charnel grounds. And even though there was terror, there was also bravery. And so there was both of these. As I went in, both my hands and my feet were shaking. But as I practiced there, then samadhi could arise. And I could see the proliferation occurring within my own mind, and see how this fear arises from the stories that the mind is telling. That really, I didn't see any external ghosts. It was just the ghosts that the mind was creating. But if we're able to really grab a hold of this, of the nature of these proliferations, then we can gain an understanding. So I give this teaching of Dhamma to you as something to contemplate and to practice. Because as members of the Sangha, it's really not easy for us to come and ordain. And we're able in this state to pass the Buddhasasana on to future generations. We've come together now, and soon we will disperse, each going to their own monastery, maybe one or two or three at a monastery. And when we have the chance, we can gather together again. And something which is really important is listening to the Dhamma. When I was staying at Wat Nombapong, all of the various monks would come and listen to Ajahn Chah teach. And we had this sincerity to listen in order to be cultivating, developing our hearts. And even though sometimes we could be lacking in the four requisites, something which we can't afford to be lacking in is Dhamma. And something which gives rise to a joy and to rapture in the heart is listening to the Dhamma of the great teachers. And it brings about increased faith and effort in the practice. So may you train and practice so that you can be a refuge for yourself and also a refuge for the laity as well. You can take this Buddhasasana and as disciples, whether direct disciples or future generation disciples of Ajahn Chah, and get to know these teachings and take these methods of practice and pass them on to the future generations of monks, and so that they will have the mindfulness and wisdom to be able to make it in their own monastic lives. And also take these teachings which you've trained in and learnt to various places throughout Thailand and overseas to spread them as well. So I rejoice and give my sadhu in the sincerity of your practice. So may all of you continue to be sincere, and may all of you grow in the Dhamma.